This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So much is changing, and so quick. Admonitions to keep sterile and separate to flatten the curve. The shuttering of workplaces. The sheltering in place. But what if your life depends entirely on that workplace? What if there's nowhere to shelter in place? Moratoriums on evictions, ranging from brief to indefinite, are imposed in cities including Atlanta and Baltimore, Newark, Miami, LA, Seattle, and the states of Virginia, New Hampshire, and New York. Other cities and states are calling for the same. Meanwhile, the overburdened shelter system struggles to cope. Matthew Desmond, founder of the Eviction Lab at Princeton and author of Evicted, has been following the situation.
I'm encouraged that some states and cities have acted so quickly to stop the bleeding, but it's not fast enough, and it's not happening in the places we really need it to happen.
So let us go through some of those where it's happening and where it isn't. And I'm going to start where you feel there's always too much emphasis, which is on the West Coast. Seattle is one of the two epicenters of the coronavirus within the U.S., and you have one of the highest homeless populations there, too. And so what's being done in Seattle to avoid exacerbating the pre-existing housing crisis?
From what we've been reading, the mayor in Seattle utilized public health emergency authority to expand shelter capacity for people experiencing homelessness in that city. Over 100 additional spaces are going to be created because of those efforts. Seattle's also halting any power and water shutoffs due to non-payment caused by work stoppages or slowdowns for the coronavirus emergency. King County, where Seattle is, it's looking into purchasing hotel spaces to allow homeless families to isolate during the crisis.
You were talking about how in Seattle there are more spaces and shelters becoming available and so forth, but that's not safe, is it?
That's right. I mean, they're this essential part of our safety net, but this is where people are eating shoulder to shoulder, where they're sleeping multiple people in the same room, where multiple people have to share bathrooms together. And so the homeless are particularly vulnerable to upper respiratory illnesses, including COVID-19. And this includes folks that are even unsheltered, right? Living on the streets. And, you know, we've seen stories last year of tent encampments experiencing outbreaks of these medieval diseases like typhus and trench fever. And those are places that are also incredibly susceptible to this outbreak as well.
So the solution of housing the homeless during this outbreak isn't the solution of the past. You're just feeding that curve that we keep seeing.
Our solution to homelessness in America in general is basically neglect and triage. It's neglect that we're going to see dozens and dozens of people living under our underpasses and by the sides of our roads on our daily commutes to work. Or, you know, we'll triage them in a shelter for a limited period of time, and then hopefully they can find their own path. And I think that this outbreak is shining a glaring light on the cruelty of the American way of life toward its poorest and most vulnerable families. You're right to point out that what we do in normal times, just to triage, is inefficient, and it's more than inefficient, it's downright dangerous in these times. But we can do better. I mean, we could look for vacant hotel rooms and subsidize hotels at the same time as housing families in a safer way. We could work with apartment buildings to identify vacant units. There are major cities, including New York, who have a tremendous amount of vacant units in the city.
Wouldn't that be wonderful, since so many of those vacant units are actually multi-million-dollar ones? It would be like seating people who can't get into coach in first class.
Yeah, I'd be for it.
We've seen eviction moratoriums in some form or another all across the country, you know, from Miami to Pittsburgh, San Francisco. But they're all very different policies, right? Which ones do you think work better than others that you're aware of?
The ones that are the best are the ones that are happening at the state level. New Jersey, for example, issued a statewide moratorium on evictions. Massachusetts issued a statewide moratorium on evictions. Because, you know, people losing their homes, that's not just a thing that happens in cities, right? It happens in suburban communities, rural communities. Some rural areas of the country have eviction rates that are just as high as the highest evicting cities in the nation. And so states that have used the judiciary to either enact or empower localities to kind of shut down evictions for the moment, those seem to be the most promising. And then we can kind of zone in on certain localities, and the ones that seem to be doing the best job are the ones that have shut down the entire housing court system and not just eviction as the sheriff spear tip of the moment.
Isn't that sort of what's happening in New York City? The housing courts are mostly shut down?
Yeah, that's right. In Massachusetts, too, except for so-called emergency evictions, and that's when a locality deems your home unfit for human habitation and moves a family out. I have to say, you know, the reason, too, Seattle, New York, Boston, LA have responded so quickly is because those are places with a strong tenant rights movement. The organizers on the ground really deserve a lot of credit for moving so quickly and so effectively during the crisis.
And that brings us to what you said at the beginning of the discussion, which is that the places that need the most help are sometimes the least responsive to the problem.
Right. We don't see much action in Oklahoma, in Mississippi, in South Carolina, in Virginia. You know, these are hotbeds for eviction. And as much as I love seeing New York and Seattle move at such speed, we need to see that speed in places that are the hardest hit by the eviction crisis, places like Tulsa and Albuquerque and Greensboro, South Carolina, and Wilmington, Delaware. You know, we need to see those stoppages there.
You mentioned Virginia. Virginia hosts some of the top-ranking eviction cities on your Eviction Lab chart.
That's right. And the state has been pretty responsive to rolling out additional support for people facing eviction and incredibly rent-burdened families over the last year. But they've been a little slower to roll out an eviction moratorium during this crisis. I should say they haven't done anything during this crisis so far.
It's probably too soon to track what the crisis has done to eviction rates.
It is too soon from our end. You know, to put this in perspective, in an average month, about 300,000 families across the United States face eviction. 300,000 eviction filings in an average month. If the average family has 2.5 people in it, that's about 750,000 people. That's the population of Denver, right? So the population of Denver nationwide faces an eviction every single month. We would expect this month to be much worse because of work slowdowns and work stoppages. A third of the American workforce earns less than $12 an hour. That's a chunk of our workforce that has limited access to paid sick leave and paid family and medical leave. They're the ones that are being crunched by this crisis and are incredibly susceptible to losing their homes.
What's your view about relief for homeowners who depend on rental income in order to make their own mortgage payments, and for homeowners in general, especially those who are finding themselves out of work? Would you favor a nationwide mortgage reprieve like in Italy, or some other solution? Or are we hurtling towards foreclosure crisis 2.0?
I hope not. You know, this is not something that we have to just kind of accept rolling off the cliff. The foreclosure crisis wrought incredible damage to families all across the country. We can prevent that now. You're right to bring up Italy, France, other nations have put a stop to mortgage payments during the crisis. The Italian banking industry got together and say, hey, let's put a lid on this, guys, until we get through this together. That's something that our banking industry can do. The federal government is considering a massive stimulus that has to include housing relief, both for renters and for homeowners. And that includes property owners and landlords as well. You know, a lot of landlords that are reliant on rent as their only source of income, they need a lot of help during this moment too. Eviction is not a solution to someone not paying the rent. It's not the solution now. It's not the solution before the crisis. You know, it's not like a family gets evicted and the sheriff hands the landlord $500. And especially during this time when we're all told to hunker down and stay indoors, it's not automatic at all that a landlord is going to find a new tenant to replace a family.
Was it Mitt Romney who proposed giving all American adults $1,000 to address the outbreak?
It was, yeah.
What do you think of that?
I don't think it would hurt. And he also proposed small business grants, aid for higher education students, deferring student loan payments for new graduates. I mean, I think that Senator Romney is thinking about the pain many vulnerable Americans are facing.
I was reading in the LA Times that there doesn't seem to be a lot of planning yet for what will happen when these moratoria expire, that tenants will have to come up with the rent payments they missed. That could obviously still be a problem for people who live paycheck to paycheck. How are they going to make up for the lost income? And it's going to be even worse if the country is plunged into a recession and people are struggling to find some stable jobs. As you have always said, Matt, we can afford this if we choose to pay for it. We'll have to adjust the tax structure. We'll have to address the basic inequalities that essentially will make it impossible for potentially millions of people to ever catch up.
I think there are two ways of looking at this, for me at least, right now. One is, you know, this could be a silver lining of this crisis, coming out of this crisis with the recognition that the country can and must do more for families that are incredibly crushed by the high cost of housing. And by do more, I mean we could build more public housing. We could extend housing vouchers to many more families. Most families that qualify for this help don't get it, right, in their entire lives. We can ensure that kids grow up in a stable, affordable, safe home. We can absolutely afford this as a nation. The other way of looking at it is to take this crisis as an opportunity to say, why is the rent so high, especially in really poor, disadvantaged neighborhoods? If I'm a landlord and it takes me $500 to keep a unit up to code, but my rent is $1,000, is that really necessary? You know, studies have shown that the profit margins for landlords in poor neighborhoods are much higher than the profit margins for landlords in middle class and rich neighborhoods. And so I think it's an opportunity not just to ask, well, what's going to happen when the moratorium lifts, but it's an opportunity to ask, what is really necessary to keep this housing up to code, and what's a fair rate of return? Have landlords been receiving a fair rate or more than a fair rate? And how does that vary across our cities? And I think that we could ask that question as we come out of this crisis and those moratoriums lift.
Matt, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brooke. It's always a pleasure.
Matt Desmond runs the Eviction Lab at Princeton University and is the author of Evicted. Thanks for listening to this podcast extra. Bob and myself and the rest of the OTM team are hard at work on this week's show, and we'd like to hear from you. The question we'd like you to answer is this: how is your coronavirus media diet affecting your mental health? Record a voice memo on your phone and send it with your name and location to onthemedia@wnyc.org with the subject line, Dealing with Coronavirus News. We may use your message on our show. Till then, wash your hands. I'm Brooke Gladstone.